I'm Linda Rudolph. I am with the Public Health Institute in Oakland, California. Thank you all for coming to our session on institutionalizing health in all policies. I want to just tell you in advance that we are going to try and make this session not all us talking at you, that we are really hoping that we can generate some conversation. We have a room that is sized appropriately to do that, and we talk about health and all policies a lot, and we really want to hear from others in the room that are also doing this kind of work. So before I do anything, I want to just start by asking how many of you are doing some kind of work that you think either is or is related to the concept of health and all policies. Great. So we should be able to have a fantastic discussion. So we're going to share some of our experiences with the implementation of health and all policies in California. We're going to identify some of the challenges, successes, and opportunities based on that work. And then we want to begin to develop sort of a community of practice, very informally, for health and all policies, because we think that this work is both incredibly exciting, we think it's the future of public health, and we think it's very challenging for a lot of different reasons, and that having more discussion about what works, what doesn't, how does it work best in different kinds of settings, what can people learn from each other will really foster more rapid spread of health and all policies and more effective and efficient implementation, especially in an era when getting funding to do health and all policies is not always feasible. So first we're going to talk a little bit about what is a healthy community. We're going to talk about what is health and all policies and why do we need it. Julia Kaplan is going to talk about the experience with the California Health and All Policies Task Force. Then we have a couple of folks from the City of Richmond in California and the City of New Orleans right here who will talk a little bit about their local experiences, and then we're going to open it up for discussion where we hope to hear from more of you who have had experience from around the country around your experiences and try and pull out some common themes. So, what is a healthy community? When you all in this room hear that term and you take off your public health professional hat and you put on your I'm a mom, I'm a friend, I'm a sister, I'm a husband, I'm a grandparent, and you think about what that word, that term healthy community means to you, what is it? Yell out some of the components. A community without sickness. Safe.
Fun.
Fun.
Vibrant.
Pardon?
Active.
Happy.
Good schools.
Good schools. Good education.
Access to healthy foods.
Affordable housing, clean,
great library.
Good libraries,
parks,
public transportation,
clean air,
diversity,
security,
bike lanes.
Health
access, medical care access. Okay, so we in California did this same exercise with in a series of like 8 workshops around the state of California, in the far north in Redding, which is a rural area, in Oakland, in Fresno, which is in California's agricultural San Joaquin Valley, in Los Angeles and San Diego. We asked the question exactly the same way that I just asked it of all of you, and we synthesized the responses that we got. And if we'd kept going with you, we would have basically gotten this list, because no matter who the group is, whether it's a group of people from other agencies, a group of public health people, a group of community residents, a group of housing advocates, it doesn't matter who you ask that question, you get this list. And this sort of framed some of the work that we did that Julia is going to talk about more in California. But it was a really good starting point for us to get thinking about what do people, not us, but people in general, think constitutes a healthy community. Once we got that list, we started thinking about, you know, why don't we have healthy communities? And we've used this sort of little parable a lot. Why is Jason sick? Why is Jason in the hospital? Because he has an infection. Why does he have an infection? Because he has a cut on his leg. Why does he have a cut? Because he fell down in the junkyard and, cut himself on some broken glass. Why was he playing on the junkyard? Well, there's no parks in his neighborhood, and it's a very poor, rundown neighborhood. Well, why does he live in that neighborhood? Because his parents are poor, and they can't afford to live in a different place. But why are his parents so poor? And we started thinking about the value in public health of just asking the question why for each of the kinds of problems that we see across a whole diversity of programs. You can apply this to, you know, why are people having asthma, or why do we have too much obesity in our community, or why do we have too much cardiovascular disease, or why do we have so much foodborne illness? And we've used this to do some mapping of the root causes of illness, and this just shows you how we do that mapping. And you can, here I've illustrated it. Actually, Karen Ben Moshe came up with this nice root cause map using the Jason is sick model to show that if you keep asking why, and you go back and back and back and back, five or six or seven steps, you always end up with the same things. And basically, those things are our living environments, the physical environments in which we live, the services environments in which we live, the media and cultural environments in which we live, the work environments, where people work, the economic environments, and the social environments. And it's those environments that really form the social determinants of health, along with some of the social inequities, the structural inequities that relate to class and our views about race and immigration status and gender status and sexual identity. Those, together with our living environments that in fact are shaped by institutions who are also influenced by those social inequities, is really what determines health in our in individuals and in neighborhoods. And because those social determinants of health are not equally distributed across our communities, we all know that. We know that there's some neighborhoods that have, you know, nice parks and farmers markets and bike lanes, and there's others that have, you know, lots of pavement, no parks, no trees, tons of traffic, polluting industries, and lots of alcohol outlets and fast food. And most of the time, we see that the people that live in the neighborhoods on the left are low-income, concentrations of people of color and poverty, and people that live on the right tend to be wealthier and white. That's our society, whether it's in New Orleans or in Oakland or in Kansas City, we see that same thing. And it's that unequal distribution of access to opportunity and to resources for health and healthy communities that really makes us have such stark and persistent health inequities in our communities. And these inequities are causing differences in life expectancy of up to 15 years. And again, you will see this difference in life expectancy no matter which community in the U.S. or, you know, in other countries as well, you look at. So the question is, who's making the decisions that impact those environments? Who's making the decisions that impact that list of things that you all identify as being what makes up a healthy community? And it's not public health. We don't decide where the transportation dollars go. We don't decide who puts alcohol outlets in one neighborhood or another. We're not responsible for zoning. We're not responsible for administering housing. We don't do rent control. We don't decide what happens in our public schools. But those are the things you all identified as being the foundations for what a healthy community is, and people can't be healthy if they aren't in a healthy community. So when we looked at that and really thought about it, we sort of said, you know, if that's what's happening and we're not really at the table making the decisions that determine health, we have to have a new approach. Because right now, decision making is siloed, it's focused on single mandates, it's very top down, it's short term in orientation, and it's unable to address these wicked or sticky problems that really cross sectors. These issues like what's the impact of poverty on health, which isn't a single pathway. It's an issue related to access to lots of the resources and opportunities that are needed for good health. It has to do with poor schools and poor education. It has to do with poor housing. It has to do with lack of access to medical care. And that's where the concept of health and all policies come from, that we all, we meaning the people in this room, and we meaning all of the people that were on the Where's Waldo picture, have a role to play in creating healthy communities, because decisions made by, quote, non-health agencies play a major role in shaping environments. And if we could figure out how to apply a health lens across the decisions that are made in all of those agencies so that public policy and agency decisions are more informed about the impacts of health, of their programs on health, we would be able to identify things that would work for health and the other agencies and at least increase the chance that decision making across all sectors would be good for people. So this is a definition of health in all policies, a collaborative approach to improving the well-being of all people by incorporating health equity and sustainability considerations into decision-making processes across sectors and policy areas. There's lots of different aspects of public, of how to do health in all policies. It is an approach, not a method. Some people, like in the South Australia case, use something called a health lens analysis. Others use health impact assessment as a tool. Health impact assessment is not health in all policies. It's a tool for health in all policies. There's lots of different ways and different levels of formality or formal analysis that go into health in all policies approaches. And we're not going to really... I think Julia might touch on some of those, but we're not going to talk a lot of detail about that. We can come back to it in the discussion. There's many, many opportunities to integrate a health lens into decision making because government does so many things. And so any place where government is making decisions, you can integrate a health lens and start talking about how is health influenced. I'm not going to go through this list, but you can see, you know, wherever there's a function that people do in government, you can apply a health lens. So the one other thing I just want to touch on, because it's important in terms of thinking about the context in which we do health in all policies, is that I learned this in medical school, the knee bones connected to the foot bone, the shoulder bones connected to the arm bone. We live in a very complex society in a very complex environment. Everything's connected. So here's commercial animal feeding operations. It's where most of the meat that people eat in the United States come from. It has a host of implications for health. And if you think about these implications one at a time, you will not address the fundamental problem, which is that we have an industrialized food system that is not good for health. They create dust. They create methane, which, you know, so livestock production is about 18% of global greenhouse gas emissions leading to climate change. They create deforestation as people in other places tear down the tropical rainforest to do cattle raising. They create dead zones in the ocean from using fertilizer and dumping it into the ocean. They're creating contaminated water, antibiotic resistance because they can't grow the hogs and the cattle fast enough in these facilities to make the profit they want without adding antibiotics to help them grow. And they contribute to a plethora of cheap, unhealthy meat, and that has a host of problems associated with it from a nutrition standpoint. Those things are all related. So part of the concept of health and all policies is sort of understanding these complex interlinkages between what we often in public health see as a single problem, where this program addresses this problem, that program addresses the other problem. So we've identified five key elements of health and all policies, and we'll come back to these in our discussion. One, promotes health equity and sustainability. Because those things have to go together. We can't really have community health unless we have equity in our society and in our allocation of resources. We will never have health for the long run unless we deal with the issues of sustainability and how we treat our ecosystems and climate change. Supports intersectoral collaboration. If healthy communities are derived from decisions that are made across many sectors and our health problems are interrelated and complex and multifaceted, we cannot get where we want to go without having many sectors talking to each other at once. It's not enough for us to just engage with the transportation department, because the transportation department makes decisions that are linked to housing and land use decisions that are made in housing and planning. Benefits multiple partners. We cannot go into working with other agencies and saying, oh, we're here from public health to tell you how you should do your job. We need to approach them with a sense of humility that recognizes that what they do and what their goals are is also very, very important. So we value health, but we know that health depends on so many other things. It depends on good education. It depends on economic development. It depends on good housing. So we have to be really respectful of other people's goals and find ways that in our aim to achieve good health, we also recognize that helping others meet their goals is going to help us meet our own goals. Engaging stakeholders. Public health is actually very good at engaging and talking with communities relative to some other sectors of government. But it's really critical that we think about what it means to find out from people in communities and from the various stakeholders in these complex processes what they think, what they see as priority needs, how they view the issues, and also what we in government are doing that impedes their ability to create healthy communities at the local level. And then finally, and this is, you know, part of the focus for this particular session, is it's not enough for us to do this project by project. because then we're almost always starting from scratch and we aren't institutionalizing the concept that a health lens be applied wherever it's relevant in decision-making processes across government at the local, state, regional, national, and international level. So we want to see changes in process and changes in structures that facilitate applying a health lens to the policymaking and decision-making process all the time. It takes a lot of relationship building to develop collaboration. It requires being willing to really listen and listen hard and respectfully to others' points of view, to be willing to extend a hand and say, I'm not going to just help you because you're going to help me, but I'm going to help you because what you do is also important, and feel that at some point in time you'll get that back. I talked about the importance of co-benefits, of trying to find where the win-wins are. And, you know, not every situation is going to have a win-win. There are going to be times when you feel like you just have to take a stand as a public health person and, you know, push through really hard as you can, on what you think needs to happen. But a lot of times, through listening and thinking about the mutuality of the endeavor, you can find ways to move forward on your goals and get something for the other party as well. We're always balancing tensions between different public policy goals when we do health in all policies, and we have to be willing often to live with ambiguity. So here's an example. Last week, there's really terrible air quality in the Central Valley. It's got terrible air quality to start with, but the drought in California, which is the worst drought in our recorded history, has really exacerbated dust, and the combination of warm weather that increases ozone pollution, another impact of climate change, and dust related to the drought, which is exacerbated by warm weather, has created bad air quality. So some of the air pollution advocates have been pushing school districts there to cancel recess and cancel football games and cancel sports. Well, I'm listening to the radio, listening to this, and I'm thinking, well, what about physical activity? Like, isn't that really important too? How do we balance those kinds of things? Two really important health goals, how do we mesh them together? How do we mesh together the need for affordable housing and the fact that in some parts of the country, the sites that are most accessible for affordable housing are near freeways, where we know those have adverse health impacts? I talked a little bit about community engagement, but without partnering with people in communities who understand and know about what their problems are, have their own ideas about how to improve things and how to get us out of the way to move forward to create the healthy communities themselves, without their power in terms of elected officials, we're not going to get the big transformational systems changes that we need to really have help in our communities. So I want to come back to this slide as we go on to talk about what will it really take and how do we get there, but we're going to need institutionalization, not just let's do one knockoff project and then another knockoff project and then a third. It's going to take real community engagement. It's going to take a reprioritization of what we do with our resources so that we really start focusing on putting our resources into people, health, equity, and sustainability rather than short-term profit. And that's going to require leadership and political will and very robust social movements. So I am going to stop there.